to Comic Talk Today for Wednesday, August 29th, 2018. And yes, I'm back! But today is not a Top of the Pile episode, which is usually the first episode of the week. What I'm doing instead is the news. If you want to hear me talk about my Top of the Pile this week, you can go check my Twitter. If you really want me to talk about it, let me know, and I'll do an episode over the weekend to talk about some of the books that I read last week. But because it's been so long, I don't know if I want to do it right now. It's already a brand new comic book day, so there's a whole bunch of new books coming out. I'm going to talk instead about the news. And there's quite a bit of news I want to talk about, in fact. And the first is a little bit of conjecture, so I guess we don't really know a whole lot about it. But there's recently a panel at Terrificon, which I don't even know what that is. But it sounds cool. It sounds terrific, one might say. And it appears that C.B. Cebulski has confirmed that Chris Claremont will be coming back to the X-Men. Here's what he said. With Chris, we'll be seeing more from Chris in the X-Men universe in the future. I grew up on those stories. I love Chris. He has a lot of things he still wants to say to those characters. We're going to let him tell those tales very soon. Interesting. Now, I do know that Chris Claremont is coming back to the X-Men. He's going to be doing one of the X-Men Black one-shots, the Magneto one. Sounds pretty interesting. I know that if you read the X-Men back in the day, as I did, then you will remember what Chris Claremont was doing. If you didn't read it back then, hopefully you can go back and reread some of that stuff, because it's absolutely fantastic. Some of the best X-Men stories ever told, I would say. Now, will they work today? I don't know. But back then, they were amazing. And to me, they still hold up. That might not be the case for newer readers. I don't know. If you've read this stuff recently, let me know what you think. But I'm pretty excited for Claremont coming back. I'm a little shy about it, though, to be honest. I want to see how this one-shot goes when it comes out, because I want to see if he still got it. You know, that was 30 years ago, 35 years ago. It's been a long time since Claremont was in the X-Men. So I don't know. Some of these guys, they kind of lose their touch a little bit. One of the books that I read last week, in fact, was Batman King of Fear. And I was very excited about it because it's the return of Kelly Jones to Batman. And I grew up reading Kelly Jones stuff and loving his artwork. And I just wasn't as impressed with it. And I tried to go back and read some of the stuff from when he was on the book itself. And it definitely felt like it was much better back then. Part of the problem, I think, may be some of the coloring. And I know I've talked about this before. There's always been a lot of criticism of the Neil Adams stuff. Whenever he tries to do new books, for whatever reason, his writer's not the best, but his art is still pretty good. But part of the problem is the coloring, and I wonder if that's kind of maybe the same thing here, where we have different paper, different coloring styles, and it doesn't work. I don't know. That's art. That's not writing. So I understand that. Maybe it is a little easier to keep up your chops with a writing gig, but I am a little concerned. I'm a little weary about it, and you know, we always talk about, God, I must have talked about this at least a half a dozen times over the past year on different podcasts, how I would love to have Claremont back. But now that it might actually be coming true, I wonder, do I really want Claremont to come back? I don't know. Let me know what you think. Are you excited for a new Claremont X-Men project? I mean, I kind of am, but I'm kind of reserved a little bit. The other one is, of course, John Byrne, and we talked about John Byrne, God, last week, 2 weeks ago, that he and Cebulski were kind of, they had breakfast and they talked a little bit about bringing back the X-Men book that John Byrne has been kind of doing on his own online, posting on his forums. And it looks pretty good. It looks pretty good. It's still the art style is a little dated, I will say, but I think that's kind of to be expected. It's a different era that John Byrne comes from. But I'm excited to see what that story would be. And it seems like they're still kind of trying to figure out what they're going to do, if they're going to put him on a project. But I thought it was interesting that John Byrne and Chris Claremont's names would be put in the same sentence here, really, in the same panel. Because for those of you that may remember, those two guys did not get along very well at all. In fact, they were doing two very different things in their books, and they used a lot of the same characters in their books, and two very different things. And they didn't talk to each other. They would play jokes on each other within their own titles. They would make fun of each other. So I'm pretty curious about that. I wonder if they would actually bring both of them back to the X-Men franchise, and how long that would last. Because I have a feeling that John Byrne would be like, nope, I'm kind of done with this. I thought it was going to be cool until I actually did it. Now I'm out. Anyways, we'll see how that goes. I am a little excited for both of these things. But until they actually come to fruition, I really don't want to talk about it too much. But let me know if you're excited about John Byrne coming back or Chris Claremont coming back, because I know some of you will be for sure. Let's talk about some new book announcements. And the first one is going to be The Return of the Original Defenders. Wow, I didn't think I'd see that coming, but that's cool. They've been teasing this for, I guess, the past week or so, Marvel has. And at first, everyone was really excited they were going to be doing a book. But then it turned out that they weren't really doing a book. but then they really are doing a book. I don't know. Marvel does some really weird things. So while at first we thought we're going to get a new Defenders book, what's actually happening is 5 one-shots, and I believe these are going to be coming out weekly. The first one is The Immortal Hulk, Best Defense by Al Ewing with art by Simone DeMayo. The next up, we have Namor, The Best Defense by Chip Zdarsky and Carlos Magno. I think that could be a really interesting one. I'm not a Namor fan. I've never have been a Namor fan, but I love Chip Zdarsky. When the man's on, the man's on. With Marvel 2-in-1, he has been on fire. So looking forward to seeing how that one goes. Doctor Strange, The Best Defense by Jerry Duggan and Greg Smallwood. That's one to watch out for, because I think Jerry Duggan does some really interesting stuff. I think mostly when he is on his independent stuff. For example, Analog, I think, is brilliant. I'm very excited for Greg Smallwood, though, because he did a bang-up job when he was working on Moon Knight, and I've been kind of curious to see what he was going to be doing since then. He's been doing some covers and things like that, but no interiors, as far as I'm aware of. So I'm pretty excited to see how that one goes, and I'm curious also how much that's going to change the Doctor Strange title. Anyway, we'll see. Silver Surfer, The Best Defense by Jason Latour, with art by Jason Latour. That's interesting. Didn't see that one coming. I do love the teaser art for Silver Surfer. I'm not sure if Latour did this teaser art, but if he did, wow, it looks fantastic. That's not a pun, by the way, because it's not Fantastic Four, even though he's... Anyways, never mind. And the final one, of course, is going to be The Defenders, The Best Defense, written by Al Ewing, with art by Joe Bennett. That's interesting. I do like Joe Bennett. His art style's a little bit different. It's, you know, Joe Bennett, I think, came up in the 80s and 90s. So his art style is, it's almost like a more contemporary version of 90s art. It's definitely evolved since doing work back then. But I think that's an interesting one. I'm curious to see how this book goes. It's going to be launching in December, if I'm not mistaken. There's no release date yet because we don't have December solicits. November ones just came out. So be a little patient. We'll find that, I'm sure, in about 2 weeks when the exact date of this is. But I will be checking these out. I'm curious to know how this is going to impact some of these other books. I already mentioned Doctor Strange. I'm curious about the Immortal Hulk one, because I thought that Al Ewing was going to be leaving the Immortal Hulk. And maybe part of the reason is because he's going to be doing this and working on Defenders. It's very possible. It makes me a little sad, though, because let me tell you, the Immortal Hulk from Marvel Comics... might be one of the best Marvel comics right now. There's quite a few. In fact, I'm going to talk about another one here in a second. But, wow, this should be pretty interesting. Another book that was announced over at Marvel is Conan the Barbarian. And I was pretty down on this when they first announced it. I didn't really care too much. And there's a reason for that. I'm just not a big Conan fan. Now, there have been some runs that I really enjoy, like the Barry Windsor Smith. I like that stuff, probably mostly because of the artwork than anything else. I know Kerry Nord was on the book for a little bit. I enjoy that one as well. And, you know, since he was on that book, he went on to do other similar titles, like, for example, Exo Manowar Valiant. I think that's kind of what got him that gig. Well, of course, now we know that because Disney owns Marvel and they've got the rights back to all this other stuff, they're going to be bringing Conan into the Marvel Universe once again. I think Marvel used to put out... Conan books back in the days, the 70s? I want to say 70s and 80s. The franchise has been with Dark Horse for quite a long time. Probably the last, like, I don't know, 20 years maybe. And, it's pretty interesting that it's coming back. I wonder how Dark Horse feels. I've been thinking about that a lot lately. With Disney buying up all these different studios and publishers, whatever else, companies, Dark Horse is losing a lot of stuff, right? So, I mean, they lost Conan, they're losing, the Aliens franchise. What's another one? I don't know. They've lost quite a few franchises that were at Dark Horse for a long, long time. And, that's really interesting because Dark Horse had a good bit of market share for a long time. I mean, not huge numbers like Marvel or DC, but they had a pretty good chunk of the market, you know, 5-6%. That's great for a small publisher, an independent publisher. And, now that they're losing some of these franchises, it seems like, I don't know, Dark Horse needs to figure something out. Anyways. Conan the Barbarian is going to be written by Jason Aaron. That's pretty exciting. With art by Mahmoud Asrar. That's also very exciting. Colors by Matthew Wilson. And the covers are going to be done by Issa Ribic, whom I absolutely love. These covers, the first one that they showed, looks absolutely fantastic. I think the new logo looks great. The art style looks great. We'll see how it ends up going. There's even a Mike Diodato cover, which has Thor and Wolverine in it. I'm not sure why, but whatever, that's cool. I guess because, hey, we're a Marvel property now, so here we go. This book is going to be coming out in January of 2019. And like I said, I wasn't very excited about it. I've never been huge into reading Conan comics. I kind of enjoyed the movie when it came out, the Schwarzenegger movie. Wasn't there a Jason Momoa Conan as well? I didn't see that one. I heard it was just okay. But, you know, now that I want to do this again. And while I wasn't excited at first, I read an interview with Jason Aaron, who apparently is a gigantic fan of Conan. In fact, he tweeted a picture of his bookshelf. He's got, like, God knows how many collected trades of Conan the Barbarian. And, you know, that actually has me a little more excited for this book than before. Because my original statement was, well, no one's going to buy this. Because, number one, I'm going to tell you, in advance, no one will buy this. The first issue will do fantastic because it's a brand new number one. It's got a big, you know, big creative team. The first Marvel Conan to come back. So I'm sure it's going to sell a bunch of copies. Okay. I could definitely see this in the top, we'll say top 20. And I thought, man, you know what? Maybe even higher than that. Maybe even the top 10. I'm sure they're going to do a ton of variant covers that'll help. But I think after that, it's going to be a severe drop off in the first. And I'm curious what Marvel sees as a sustainable number for a book like Conan the Barbarian. Because Conan does have fans, right? You know, I was talking about this on Discord with some of the other Nerd Legion podcasters. And, for example, Michael Sparksman, who does the 2BT show. Go check that out, by the way. It's hilarious. They just talked about nachos, and it was amazing. He was really excited about it because he grew up reading this stuff, and he loves it. And so there's obviously an audience, right? I know at least a half a dozen people that I've talked to that will be picking this book up. But I'm wondering, overall, in terms of the market, how popular will this book be? And again, what will be the cutoff for making this a successful run, right? Because you gotta remember, with Marvel or DC books, you can't just sell 20,000 copies, okay? That's not worth their effort if you're selling 20,000. I mean, if you're an indie publisher, if Dark Horse is doing this and selling 20,000, it'd probably be like their number one seller, right? With Marvel, you can't really have that. And if you're devoting a fantastic creative team, because I mean, Jason Aaron, I love his Thor stuff has been incredible for years and years now. I'm not sure about the current book, by the way, but I'm not going to talk about that today. Mahmoud Asrar, I love his artwork as well. So could be really interesting if they play their cards right. And if they let this book be what it wants to be, right? If Jason Aaron is as big a fan as he seems to be of this book, and I have no reason to doubt him, then I think it'll definitely show off in the writing, right? Because when you have a writer that's really excited to write a book with characters they grew up loving, I think that makes it extra special. So we'll see. We'll see. I'll definitely pick up the first issue just to see what it's like, but I'm not quite holding my breath for something that I'll be picking up on a regular basis. Overall, this particular genre doesn't excite me too much. Like, I read the Red Sonja books when they come out, right? But I usually don't end up sticking with them, regardless of who's writing it, right? Like, Gail Simone was doing the book for forever, and, you know, like, I'll pick it up, and I'll read a couple issues, and I'll quit, and then they'll relaunch it with a new number one, and I'll pick that up and read a couple, and I'm kind of done after that. Again, maybe not necessarily my type of genre, but there are definitely fans for this, so we'll see how that goes. That's coming out in January of 2019. A book that I'm very excited for is Batman and the Outsiders. Of course, creative team written by Brian Edward Hill, who just finished a 4-issue arc on Detective Comics starting these characters. It was called On the Outside, of course, so we knew that we're going to have some kind of Outsiders title spinning out of this. In particular, when Black Lightning showed up, because those of you that remember the original Outsiders book, Black Lightning was the team leader, so of course it makes perfect sense. I do like this new team. It's a little bit different than the original. I am curious to know if we're going to see some of the original members joining the team. And I haven't seen that yet, but we'll see. Right now, it looks like we're definitely getting Black Lightning, Signal, Orphan, and Katana. I think Katana is an interesting choice for this team, and I think one that will work very well. Orphan, I'm very happy to see this list because I don't think Orphan gets used enough. And I know she played a big part in Detective Comics. God, how long did Tinian write that book? 30 issues? 35 issues? Long time. So she was key to that, and I love seeing her. And I think it's a character with a lot of potential, so I'm happy she's going to be explored even further. And then Signal. And you know, Signal, I think, is the most interesting one out of the whole list because Signal, I think, is a character that definitely resonates with a particular group of people. That group of people, to me, seems smaller than DC may wanted it to. You know, Snyder, I think, had big plans for this character. And I don't think single resonated enough with anybody to make it worth their while. So he kind of just flip-flopped in between books, and there was some kind of attempt at fleshing out his backstory. You know, there was a miniseries that didn't do very well. I think it was supposed to be a 5-issue series. It ended up being knocked down to 3 because nobody was buying it. And we'll see. You know, I love Brian Edward Hill as a writer, so I think he is definitely one of those people that could make The Signal interesting. I don't think we saw enough of Signal in this arc for me to judge whether I'll change my mind about the character. I think part of my issue with Signal is when I see Bat Family characters, I don't particularly like overpowered people in them. Because there also seems to be kind of an image, an aspect of Batman. And so as a result, Batman doesn't have superpowers, neither should his proteges. But, you know, Signal's got some abilities, and, you know, maybe they can let him grow out of that. They would actually, I think, maybe have to change his costume a little bit. He's still got the Batman Signal in the front, and I get that because he started out in the Bat Family. But I don't know. I'm not quite sold on Signal yet. I do hope that this Outsiders book will change my mind when it comes out in December, but not holding my breath yet. I do love the rest of the team, and I'm all for it. I love the creative team, Brian Edward Hill. I love anything that he does. He has been doing a lot of stuff for the Big Two lately. You know, I'm very excited about that What If X-Men thing. And, of course, he's Detective Comics. But, you know, I know him from the Top Cow stuff. So he's doing Postal, Cyber Force, Aphrodite, those kind of books. And I'm very excited to see where he can go. This guy is a brilliant writer. Definitely takes his time developing each character and make the reader care about them. So I think he's the perfect person for this book, and I'm looking forward to it. And, of course, Dexter Soy, who just came off of a run on Red Hood and the Outlaws. And of course, those of you that listen regularly know that I love that book, and many of you have gone out and purchased that book and realized that, hey, I also love this book. Thank you for doing that, by the way. DC, send me my paycheck. And I'm excited. He's a fantastic artist, and I think he's going to be a good fit for this. That's, of course, coming out in December. Now let's talk about some cancellation books. This is a little sadder part of the show. And the first one, of course, Moon Knight is being canceled after issue 200, which comes out in October. This was kind of, I don't know, I mean, I kind of saw this coming. Moon Knight never manages to keep a book running for a very long time. And here's the weird thing about Moon Knight, right? So in the first, like, 30 years of the character, we had maybe, like, 4 or 5 series, which I would say that's probably about average, right? But then since Ellis did his run in 2014, so in the past 4 years, we've had like another 5 volumes, and that's just insane. Insane. I don't know what could be done to make this character resonate a little bit more with people. Obviously, he resonates with me, right? I just did an episode a couple weeks ago, Secret Origins Moon Knight. Go check that out. It's on the Comic Talk Today feed. And I love the character. I think he's fantastic. He's really interesting. But for some reason, it doesn't resonate with a lot of people. And I get it. Not every character's for everybody. But there's definitely things that could be done with the character that would make him, I think, more appealing. One of them would be this fantastic story I've got in my head, but I'm not going to talk about it. You can go listen to Nerd Legion. I don't even know what episode that was. I can't plug a podcast if I don't know what episode I talked about a certain thing in. Anyways, I did talk about this with Nick, and Nick loved it. And I've run it by a few people, and they all love it. So, Marvel, come at me. I will write Moon Knight for you. More than happy to do so. But the book is ending with issue 200. Apparently, there's been some a couple different explanations as to the reason why. I think one may be Max Bemis's own personal things going on. That I can totally understand. Of course, the book is not a big seller, so I'm sure that's a bigger part of it. And we kind of saw this coming, right? Because the artist had announced he was leaving after 200. And so I was like, yeah, they're probably just going to cancel it. And, you know, they are. I do hope that at some point we'll get a new Moon Knight book, and it'll be fantastic. The other one that's kind of up in the air right now is The Sentry, and this is the one that I hinted at earlier. I find that really interesting, because I think The Sentry is a really incredible book. But the problem is, people, I don't think, want to give this book a chance because of The Sentry's past history. And now, this is written by Jeff Lemire right now, whom, of course, I adore. I think Jeff Lemire is a brilliant artist, a brilliant person, and he can really do different things with characters when given the chance. You know, he did a pretty good job with Moon Knight, trying to juggle some of the stuff that Ellis had done. And now he's doing The Sentry. And I think what he's done with The Sentry is so totally out there. And it's not something completely new, by the way. Because I've seen this kind of story in movies and in other comics. If you want to get some concrete examples, I'll be more than happy. Just find me on Twitter at Geekvine, and we can talk about it. But, you know, it's not a new concept. But the fact that you've got the Sentry kind of not really living in the real world, he's just a regular person, Bob, and by the way, brilliant, he's just Bob, right? Except he has to go and do this, like, almost VR mental exercise where he becomes the Sentry and has to, he works through his issues in order to keep the Void at bay. And you know, I think that's kind of what people remember is when the Sentry went crazy and the Void came in and he killed everybody, and it was kind of brutal. So I get why people don't want to give it a chance. I get that the book's not being solicited anymore. But I think if people gave this a chance, they would see how brilliant and different it is. Because there's a lot of interesting ideas in how the Sentry is being portrayed. His sidekick is kind of taking hold as the main character of the book, which I find really interesting, Scout. And issue 3 was really very interesting, having the sidekick teaming up with the ex-villain in order to the hero. That's about all I want to talk about there, but the process of getting to that point and where it seems to me the story would lead with issues 4 and 5, and I haven't read solicits for either one of those, so I could be wrong, but I think it's fascinating because it's a whole new and different approach to treating superheroes, and that's something that Jeff Lemire is really good at. So I'm a little sad that not enough people are giving this book a chance to make it worth their while. And I'm sure Marvel will say, oh, well, this was planned as a 5-issue series all along. And that may be the case, but as far as I know, it's not really the case anymore with comics, right? You say, hey, we're going to do this miniseries, and then if it does really well, you end up getting 20 more issues, right? We just talked about Wasted Space last week. That just happened, right? Bone Parish from Cullen Bunn over at Boom Studios, same thing, right? The runs got extended from a mini to an ongoing because the sales were doing very well. So, I don't know. I'm a little upset about this, but definitely check out The Sentry. They're doing a trade. It's coming out in January, like issues 1 through 5. So if you want to wait till then, I mean, I guess you could do that, but feel like this book is really great, which I think it is. You might miss out on the chance for it to come back. And we've seen books come back before, right? Remember The Vision? Anyways, we'll see how it goes. So, sad to see The Sentry go. I do think this may be, for me right now, top 3. Definitely top 5 Marvel books. So, I think if you listen to this podcast, you may know I try not to, lead you astray very often. And maybe I do sometimes. But I think this is one to check out if you're not reading. Alright, let's go on over and talk about some entertainment stuff. And the first one I find really interesting is that DC Universe is going to be, they announced they're going to be doing DC Daily. It's a new show. The first episode, kind of, it's more like a pilot, I guess, is being hosted by Kevin Smith. If you're listening to this on the 29th, it's actually live streaming tonight. So you'll be able to watch it on their YouTube channel. I don't even know what the DC YouTube channel is, but just look up DC on YouTube and I'm sure you'll find it. They're going to be doing a live stream tonight at 7:30 Eastern. So if you listen to this before then, I doubt it because I'm recording a little bit late. But check out the YouTube and see what you think about it. I think the format is very interesting. It's not going to be Kevin Smith on every episode. It's going to be a rotating cast of hosts. And what I find interesting, number one, is that this is replacing DC All Access. Right, so they haven't really talked about DC All Access a whole lot. There is a DC All Access app, which is meh. So I already figured the DC All Access app was getting replaced by DC Unlimited when the service came out, or DC Universe when the service came out. This is also replacing kind of the YouTube channel, right? So they do, I don't even know how many episodes a week, 3 or 4 probably episodes a week. They do like short interviews, a lot of interviews with Dan DiDio are on there. They do like live sketching, they do some interviews on there, obviously announcements, both in the comics and the CW shows and the movies and all that stuff. A lot going on DC All Access. And all that is going away and being replaced by this new show, DC Daily. And I think that's actually a pretty good move, right? Because if you want to give your subscribers additional content to subscribe to, they might not be like, oh my god, now I have to subscribe to DC Universe because DC Daily's on there, right? I mean, you can already get that content for free right now on YouTube or Twitch or wherever else they have their videos. But it's an additional thing, right? And it gives you new content that you can watch or listen to or whatever every single day. And that's important because some of the stuff that they do is actually good. I'm not a huge fan of the way the shows on DC All Access are hosted. It's not my particular style. Obviously, I have a different style for this podcast, and I think the way that they do it is a little too over-energetic, and, you know, sure, they have millions of listeners. I don't. I just have a couple thousand, but it's just not my thing, right? I think it appeals more to a younger demographic in some ways, which I always find really interesting, by the way, when they try to do these media things for a younger demographic, because we all know that everybody that reads comics is between the age of, like, 35 and 50 right now, right? I mean, male and female. I don't know what the male and female breakdown is, but I guarantee you, if you break down an age range, 35 to 50 is probably 60%, 70% of people buying comics. And people are buying more than 5 comics, I would say 90% between 35 and 50. So I always find it interesting when they try to do these things because, you know, like, I don't want to talk about this on this episode, but, like, you know, kids don't really read comics, right? They go on YouTube and watch videos of people reading comics to or explain the comic in 30 seconds, right? Like, that's what kids do. And I'm not demeaning that in any way. I mean, my kids do that all the time. Matter of fact, I always find it weird because I grew up reading, playing video games, for example, also, and I love playing video games. My kids don't even want to play video games. They just want to go on YouTube and watch somebody else play video games. And I think that whole thing is fascinating. Definitely not a topic for this, podcast, but I do want to talk a little bit more about that in another show. Maybe on Nerdy Legion. So go subscribe to Nerdy Legion with me and Nick Wetmore. Over on the Disney/Marvel side, The Disney company announced that the name of their streaming service is going to be called Disney Play. This is red flags for me as a comic book fan. As an entertainment fan, I think it's fine. As a comic book fan, it's a red flag. DC is going all in on the DC thing, right? It's DC Universe. So what are you going to get? You're going to get DC stuff. Disney Play is not that. And, you know, I often wondered about this. I know Nick and I talked about this on Nerdy Legion podcast. I think I've talked about it on this show, either solo or also when I've had a couple guests. I think maybe with like Aaron and Ronnie, for example. We've definitely talked about it on Absolute DC or maybe Ultimate Marvel, one of those two podcasts. But Disney is not focused on the comic business to me, right? Whereas this DC is all in, right? Warner Brother sees that as a different, separate thing that they can use to mine content. I think Disney, because of the structure of the company, is more about the brand name, the brand image, right? That's because that's why they won't do certain things with their movies, like they won't rated R movies, and that's led to some interesting discussions on what's going to happen to Deadpool when now that Disney's going to own it. It's also led to some discussions about the changes being made to the New Mutants movie that was going to be coming out this year, and now because of the purchase, it has been delayed a year for rewrites and reshoots. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on with the fact that this is Disney, and they have a certain image that they want to keep up with. And to me, it's a little outdated to keep that image. I mean, it's a 100-year-old company, right? So there's a lot of, I guess, cultural baggage there. But, you know, we live in different times, and I think the company could do something a little different. So anyways, the service is called Disney Play, which to me means I'm just going to have a bunch of stuff in there. And I think that's fine. That will sell a lot of people. I will be getting the service for my kids because there's a lot of kids' movies, right? I mean, my daughter loves watching, like, Toy Story, what else, like Trolls and all that stuff. She loves that stuff. And so it makes perfect sense that I will get this. The service is not going to be very expensive. From what I've read, it's going to be priced lower than Netflix, which I think the lowest Netflix plan is like $9 or $10. So I think until they get their content up, it's going to be much lower. I honestly don't see this being any more than DC Universe, which is $7.99. And I think based on the stuff that they have that would interest me, I don't think I would even pay that. I think that DC Universe was kind of around that range for me, $7-$8. Based on the stuff that I've seen here, not really interested. Part of the reason is Disney still has a lot of contracts that they need to finish out. And as a result, they can't put certain content on this service. So, for example, I saw a number thrown out that they're going to Disney's going to lose $300 million once they pull all their stuff from Netflix. Now, hopefully they can make up $300 million in new subscriptions for the service. But think about that. Just on the fact that they're not going to have their Disney stuff on Netflix is costing $750 million. That's a lot of freaking money. That's a lot of money. And running a service like this is not cheap, right? I mean, you gotta think, just on bandwidth alone to run a video service, it's gonna be millions and millions of dollars just in bandwidth costs. Not to mention acquisition costs, et cetera, et cetera. And I know you listen to this and don't care about any of that stuff, but this is important when you're trying to launch a service like this. I think what would have been more successful is go ahead and do your Disney Play service, but add some of this content, this video content, to the Marvel Unlimited app, because people are already subscribed to that. You can up the, I don't know, a couple bucks, okay? Instead of 10 bucks a month, make it 12 bucks a month, and you add all your Marvel movies, all your Marvel TV shows. The problem is there's not enough of that right now, right? So, for example, there's not going to be anything that came out before this year in this service. So, like, Captain Marvel will be in there, Avengers 4 will be in there, but everything else is already contracted somewhere else. You know, Netflix has some of that stuff now, and they will for a couple of years. Some of these deals are done way in advance, so I'm sure maybe when it comes off of Netflix, like somebody like Hulu might get it, for example, or even like Showtime or HBO. There's those kind of deals. As a matter of fact, I haven't even seen, let me tell you a story. I haven't seen the latest Spider-Man movie yet because I cannot rent it or stream it anywhere. I have to have, I think it's on Cinemax. Listen, I don't have cable. I'm not going to get Cinemax just to watch the damn movie. And I'm not paying $20 to see it, because if I don't like it, then I'm out 20 bucks. And that's crazy, right? Why shouldn't I be able to rent something like that? I think it's a crap deal. It's probably a good deal for the companies, but it's a crap deal. So I'm not really excited about this. There's not going to be a whole lot of Disney stuff in here or Star Wars stuff in here either. Except new stuff that's going to be coming out, right? Same deals, new stuff coming out. The TV show that's costing a bunch of money. The TV show that Disney is developing for this Disney Play service is costing, I think it was $25 or $30 million per episode. That's $300 million. Look, if they hadn't done that show, then they could recoup the $300 million they're using from Netflix. Anyway, I'm not interested in this at all. I'm going to say this up front. I'm gonna get it if my kids ask for it and I feel like there's enough content in there. But, for myself, I'm just not interested. I'm more concerned about the comic books than anything else. And, you know, the video stuff is kind of an added perk. And that's why I'm still, even though I'm doing DC Universe, I'm just kind of gonna do that as a trial for a couple months until I figure out if it's worth for me, right? Because I enjoy reading comics and the video stuff is just extra. By the way, I know that I talked about, on Twitter, I was talking a little bit about switching back over to physical comics. I'm not going to go into a great deal of depth on that right now, but, I do feel like I miss the smell of comics, reading comics. And, especially now that DC's like changed their paper, I think it makes it more enjoyable to read in this new paper. And, I don't know. I still haven't decided yet. If you have some ideas about how I can go about doing that, let me know. I know a few of you chimed in, when I commented that on Twitter. I think what I may end up doing is instead of just the two books that I get physically, that's all I get, by the way, physically, is Batman and Detective right now. That's the way it's been for probably close to a year now, I would say. I might pick up a few things here and there. For example, books that don't have a digital presence, like the Scout Comics, I'll get those as well. If there's a small indie publisher that I really enjoy, I might get their books. But for the most part, 99% of my books that I get are digital. And it's just easier, right? Because, I mean, if I'm reading 25, 30 comics a week, and that's roughly what it comes out to every, then it's just easier for me to just hit subscribe on Comixology. And when I wake up in the morning, they're in my inbox. We'll see. I might move that up a little bit. I know Ronnie suggested doing like 10%, print. I want to see if out of everything that I read, 10% isn't great. But anyways, Disney Play, we'll wait and see. And I mean, fourth quarter of 2019, by that point, DC is going to be so far ahead on their DC Universe. It's just unreal. I can't believe this is happening right now. All right, two more things that I want to talk about. Tom Hardy has signed up to do 3 Venom movies. Holy crap. Like, this movie hasn't even come out yet. Venom is coming out October 5th, and he's already signed up for 3. So, I mean, Sony must think this is going to be a big franchise. And I don't know where they get these numbers from. I do hope that it's successful. Judging by all the stuff that I've seen, the trailers, the latest trailer looks a little better than everything else we've seen, but, I don't know if this is going to be a good movie, guys. I'm just going to be up front. It'll be a fun movie. I will be going to watch it, but will it be a rewatchable thing? I don't know. I don't know about that. We'll see. I think three movies is a big ask. A lot of people are very excited. In fact, I saw an article this morning that said Venom is the most highly anticipated movie of 2018. I don't know who they asked these questions to because I'm not that excited about it. But maybe they're just judging by buzz on social. I don't know. Surely they're not asking a large demographic. And I don't know how many Venom fans or, you know, even comic fans they're asking these questions. It might just be Hollywood people. And maybe what's important. I don't know. But I thought that was interesting. I wanted to bring it up. And finally, just real quick, I want to talk about this Inky Pen app that's coming out. This is really weird. So Inky Pen is a new comic book subscription service. You pay $7.99 a month and you get to read as many comics as you want. The service will be available in the US, Canada, Europe, Mexico, Russia, Africa, and Australia. I thought Russia was in Europe. I guess maybe not. Maybe just part of it. Africa and Australia, for $7.99 or €7.99 or whatever that translates to in your local currency. And that gives you access to 10,000 titles from IDW, Dynamite, Valiant, The Humanoids, and Andrew McNeil. And I'm assuming they're going to be adding more publishers there as well. I think with IDW, Dynamite, and Valiant, to me, this is actually worth $7.99. The problem for me is, at $7.99, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get the same exact lineup on Comicsology Unlimited, which is only $5.99. So they're already fighting kind of an uphill battle. The second thing that is kind of an uphill battle is that I kind of buried the lead here. This is only available on the Nintendo Switch. And let me tell you, I love reading digital comics. I just talked about that, right? I read 25, 30 books a week. That's 100 to 120 books a month that I read. And let me tell you, I love reading comics on my tablet, but I usually, when I read my comics, I do them on a computer on a 24-inch monitor. As a matter of fact, I've even been known to read comics on my 60-inch TV. So, I'm not excited to read a comic on the Switch. Number one, I don't own one. But I think maybe this is definitely an interesting thing, right? Because the Nintendo Switch is very popular. A lot of people have these things. People have them, love them. But do you want to read a comic in that format? Here's the problem. There's been many, many different digital comic book services, both subscription and just, you know, pay for what you want or whatever it is. But the one defining characteristic that makes Comixology so great that other people cannot copy because it's trademarked or copywritten or whatever it is the guided view. And you know, if your screen is big enough, then guided view doesn't matter, right? Because most people, I think, would prefer to read an entire page at once, not panel by panel. But guided view is key when you're reading in a smaller screen. Like, if I want to read a comic, if I cannot wait to read something until, you know, I get my physical copy of Batman, for example, if I cannot wait to go get that, by the way, I do buy that twice. I just admitted to it. As much as I've poo-pooed the book, I have every issue twice. I own every issue digitally on Comixology, and I own every issue on print. So if I can't get to my shop that same day to go read it, then guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go ahead and read it on my lunch break, probably on my phone, because I usually don't take my tablet to work. I'll probably read it on my phone. And guided view is fantastic for that. To have a device with this small a screen with no guided view, I'm not really convinced. They showed the video of it, and it looks like the controls are very easy. You can zoom in and out very easily using the joysticks. But I don't think this is the right format. I'm not sure how well this is going to do, to be honest with you. I think, you know, $7.99 is a good price point. But I think by now, there are better options with more titles available. And I don't see this being very successful. But if you are excited for Inky Pen, let me know. If you've never heard about it, then I guess you don't need to worry about it. I want to thank you all for listening. And sorry for not putting out an episode for a few days. Like I said, I've been pretty busy with work and some home stuff as of late, so I didn't get a chance to record. I read all my books Sunday, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to go and read these things. And my wife's like, I need you to do this. And that one thing took me 4 hours to do, and then I got a nail through my foot. Anyways, it sounds like I'm making excuses, so it doesn't even matter. My foot's fine, by the way. I don't need to cut it off. But thanks again for listening. If you want to get in touch with me, at GeekVine on Twitter is always the best place. You can email nerdylegion@gmail.com. I check that every, you know, couple days or whatever. And I think that's it. I'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode. I'll catch you then.